What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the audio podcast that looks at the future and says, well, we know where we're going, but we don't know where we've been. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Volkemann.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
So today we wanted to talk about a guy who's had some fairly exciting and controversial ideas, Aubrey de Grey. And this is someone who has sort of dedicated the second half of his professional life to figuring out how to defeat the symptoms of aging.
You may have seen him in various mind-expanding videos on the internet. He's a scraggly-looking fellow with a gigantic beard. He looks kind of like a latter-day Rasputin.
David Stipp of Forbes called it his Rip Van Winkle beard, which I really like.
Every single article I have ever read that had anything to do with him had at least a part of a paragraph dedicated to this man's beard. And indeed, it is impressive.
His beard, it's like a tree.
It is. He's been on TED Talks. He's mm-hmm. we've got a feature on him on Curiosity Project, and it's because he has some pretty interesting ideas of how to combat the symptoms of aging. And he comes from a really interesting pathway, because he didn't start out as a biologist. He started out as a computer scientist, specifically focusing on artificial intelligence.
Right. And he's never actually been – well, I mean, he has studied a lot of biology, but he's studied theoretical biology.
Mm. And so he's sort of approaching this from the perspective of an engineer, which has some doctors and other people within the medical field concerned that perhaps – it's an oversimplified view, but I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. We should sort of talk more about his area of interest and what it is he's trying to accomplish. So, first of all, you could say that he's a gerontologist in a way. That's someone who studies aging. So that's the whole area of the study of aging is gerontology. And he is he formed this organization called the Strategies for Engineered Negligible Senescence.
Say that again.
SENS.
SENS.
There you go. Go with the acronym.
Negligible Senescence. Yeah. And so senescence, that means?
something. What does senescence mean?
All right. Well, so cells, normal healthy cells, go through a life process in three stages. First, you've got normal healthy cell division, which is mitosis. And then eventually the cells will stop dividing, and that's called senescence. After that, you have cell death, which is apoptosis. But that comes later and is debatably awesome for your body.
Right. So this idea of the negligible engineered senescence, or senescence, depending upon how it's pronounced, I honestly don't know. The idea here is that we are trying to find a way to halt that phase of an organism's life where the cells are no longer dividing in a healthy way, or they're dying off too early. Essentially, the idea is to try and preserve an organism's healthy state at the peak of its life. So, for example, the numbers that I tend to hear for a human, according to the Aubrey de Grey stuff, is between the ages of, say, 25 and 29, right in there where you are, in theory, at your healthiest, at least as far as, you know, an average person is concerned. So it's all about trying to create this solution, or actually series of solutions, to maintain that kind of level of health indefinitely. And it may extend your life, it may not, but at any rate, what ideally what it would do is allow you to have a healthy, active life throughout your life.
Right. He said several times that that added lifespan is not the point of all of this. It's really quality of life that he's looking for.
Right. Although he's also talked about how he would love to live to 1,000 so that he could read all the books he'd want to read
and see all
the movies he wants to see.
Wouldn't some of us, many of us, a few of us?
Well, I think we've already established that I'm planning on trading in Joe's immortality for double immortality for myself, as I recall from our previous podcast.
Even more.
Right. So, yeah, I need to be twice as immortal. But DeGray lays out seven principal mechanisms of aging, or you can also think of this as different types of damage.
This is interesting because I think most people don't think about what actually happens when we age. They don't realize that it's the cumulative effect of a series of processes.
It's several biological processes.
Exactly. And so any solution would not be, like I said, just one solution. It would have to be multiple solutions to meet all the requirements to cancel out these seven principles of aging.
So what is aging
at
its core?
Well, the way he breaks it down, because he's looking at aging as these various types of damage, he has the seven different types. The first three he lays out are types of cellular damage. The first is this loss of cells, the idea that you have cells that die and they aren't replicated, so they're not being replenished in any way. So you could have muscle loss, bone loss, that kind of thing. And a lot of these different types of damage that he talks about relate to specific kinds of diseases or conditions that you are probably familiar with.
So does this particular problem have anything to do with what I've heard of the Hayflick limit?
Yes, that would be the limit that was proposed by Dr. Leonard Hayflick back in 1965. And he observed that cell death process that I mentioned earlier, that apoptosis. And this is a natural process. It's really useful for us not having webbed hands. Because embryos, when you're going through development, not all parts of you wind up being you. You know, it's we lose our tails, we lose the webbing between our fingers, and so that's very useful for that. Apoptosis goes on during menstruation. It's really great for fighting off viruses and cancers. However, like Jonathan was saying, at a certain point, your cells are dying off and they're not being replenished.
Right. So that's one thing that we would need to address. And he has he's named the various solutions, or at least the kind of overview of what the solution might be. Keeping in mind, we don't have solutions for all this. If we did, we'd already have this
immortal?
Implemented. Yeah.
Right.
Or at least we'd all be healthier. But it's sort of he's named what the overall approach would have to be in order to address this issue. So in this case, he calls this part replenescens. Each one having SENS at the end of it, S-E-N-S, which is the
acronym. Yeah.
So that's the first one, is the loss of cells, you know, figuring out how to make sure that cells continue to replenish.
He's proposed a stem cell therapy for that one as being kind of the leading.
Yeah. And in fact,
stem cells are just kind of magic, aren't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're unicorns.
They're pretty much the.
They're made of unicorn giggles. That's a science fact, guys.
Okay. So you can just buy that straight from ThinkGeek. You get that canned unicorn meat. You've got. That's not the way that works.
No,
stem cells, they're like the quantum phenomena of medicine, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. These are the cells that have the potential to develop into other types of cells. And depending upon what kind of stem cells you're talking about, the variety of cells they can turn into is very wide or very narrow. Because not all stem cells are the kind where this one protocell could be anything. Some of them are... They can be any type of vascular tissue, that kind of thing. So it all depends on the type of stem cell. But anyway, yes, he does say that that is one potential way we could meet this challenge. And in fact, from what I understand, it might be one of those things that would be a requirement, because some of the other solutions he's proposed would end up affecting us in such a way that we would have to have stem cell treatment in order to combat some of the side effects we could have from treatments from the other principles. This is where it starts getting complicated, but we haven't even gotten into principle number two yet.
Okay, let's go to number two.
Thank you. Number two is that there are two different versions of this. So this is technically two and three. So number two is that you end up with too many cells because the cells don't die when they are supposed to. And that one, he suggested apoptosens. This is so hard to say because of the SENS acronym at the end. That was his solution or overview of what the solution would need to be to take care of that problem. And the other type was too many cells because these cells divide when they aren't supposed to, which
sounds like cancer.
Exactly. That's pretty much what cancer is. And so his overview of what the solution would have to be is called oncosens, which oncology, that makes sense, you know.
Sure. So. Yeah, because cancer is actually pretty cool. I mean, not when you have it, obviously, that's terrible, but the way that cancer cells don't die is kind of terrific. And so people are doing a lot of studying into that to see if we can use that to extrapolate.
This idea that you can take something that is very harmful in one manifestation, but find a way of applying some of that in a medicinal way in order to prolong life. It's a fantastic idea if we can make it work. I mean, we've seen this in other applications as well, not just with cancer, things like viruses. We've seen medicine use viruses in order to have nanomedicine delivered to particular parts.
Yeah, if you can reprogram them, then you can get them to do what you want.
Exactly. You can code a virus shell with a certain type of protein, and theoretically it'll seek out the right kind of cells to deliver a cellular amount of medication. So you're dosing particular cells. So, you know, we see this where we're using things that were at one point potentially hazardous or deadly in other ways to improve our lives. So that might work out, but we still have to figure out how to actually
accomplish any of that.
Well, not only that, but how do we actually stop the uncontrolled division?
Right.
You know, how do we stop the cancer part of cancer and utilize the beneficial aspects while getting rid of the ones that are deadly? And he's thinking about mainly things like a gene therapy as an approach. And again, that's one of those approaches that some people say may oversimplify the matter, although it's really kind of hard to say right now, because you can frame these approaches in such general language as for them to be they can fit any definition, in a sense. You know, like if you just sit there and say, someday we will be able to do this, it's kind of hard to refute that. All right, well, that's the three types of cellular damage, but then there's three types of molecular damage. One of those is damage to DNA, specifically in mitochondria. These are the cellular powerhouses. This is an energy element to the way cells live. They have their own DNA, mitochondrial DNA. And unlike the DNA that you find in a cell nucleus, which has some repair systems built up around it to help maintain that DNA's integrity, the mitochondrial DNA they don't have that kind of support system. So they are more vulnerable to various types of mutations.
Right, and they exist in a highly oxidized environment, which makes them even more susceptible to damage than a lot of other little cellular bits.
Right, so that's another one of the ones that he's identified. And mitosens, which is probably the easiest one to pronounce, is his overview of the solution to that. Then you have two different types of molecular junk or garbage, depending upon which one you read. But in any case, it's unwanted molecules that begin to accumulate within an organism. And some accumulates inside cells, which these are byproducts of cellular processes. One example of this would be cardiovascular disease, that it can manifest in that way. The approach that de Grey suggests is called lysosens. And then there's the molecular junk that accumulates outside a cell's walls, so in between cells. And this is created through metabolism. De Grey points out that an example of this could be manifested in something like Alzheimer's or diabetes. And amylosens is the name of the approach that you would have to address this issue. So those are the three types of molecular damage.
Right. And there are already processes going on inside your body that are taking care of some of this junk. The lysosome within cells is the organ that kind of digests some of this junk, but it can't digest everything. And so some of the therapy that he's suggesting is adding extra enzymes in there to drive the lysosome to get rid of more stuff than it currently can.
Right. Yeah, some of these molecules that get formed turn into stuff that cells just can't process. And so it just accumulates. And that's why they call it junk. It's this idea of kind of like if you've ever lived with someone who is a hoarder, where you walk into the room and you just realize that tomorrow I will not be able to open this door. Same sort of thing. These cells get bogged down with lots of molecules that they cannot deal with, and then eventually that causes problems.
Right. Yeah. Outside of your cells, the immune system process is called phagocytosis, that's supposed to take care of this. And it does to a certain extent. But
phago from the root, like eating.
Correct.
So you got some cells that come and eat up the junk.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So his proposition is to kind of chemically amp up that process.
Right. And then the final principle, so we've got the three types of cellular damage, three types of molecular damage. The final principle is called cross-linking, and this has to do with tissue. So you have tissues that hold things into place, kind of give a shape, sort of a scaffolding, if you will, for various types of...
So that all your cells aren't just floating free within your body.
Right, you're not just a big blobby mass of cells. It's very important as far as I'm concerned, but... In most cases, they're supposed to be elastic, right? So the idea being that they can change in shape and maintain an organism's
It's why you can push on your skin and have it bounce back.
Yeah, it's why your tendons will hold your muscles in place, but not restrict them so that you can't actually flex them. That sort of thing, or. Oh, your heart muscles as well. I mean, it's important stuff. But the problem is that as you age, there are these proteins that can form cross links between a tissue's lattice-like structure, which then gives it rigidity. So something that was once elastic becomes more stiff and rigid as time goes on, and this obviously can inhibit your various organs' ability to do their jobs. So that's something else that has to be addressed as you age, and the overall process that he names in this one is called glycosens. So those are the seven principles of aging, the various symptoms of aging that he wants to try and eliminate through various means. And some of them, scientists, I think, agree are more reasonable than others. Some of them, I think some scientists and doctors would say, are oversimplifications of the problem, or at least the solutions are so vague as to not be practical in the foreseeable future.
So I remember a while back he was challenging people to disprove this, wasn't he?
Yeah, he had his Methuselah project, and also there was the magazine Technology Review, which comes from MIT. They got together and put up $10,000 each, so $20,000 total, as a challenge to anyone who could draw up an explanation that would disprove the SENS approach. saying that, is there something that's been overlooked, or is there a fundamental flaw, or is there something about this approach that is simply not likely or feasible? And they received, I think they received 7 or 8 responses, but only a few of them were considered, only a few of them actually met the requirements that were set out by the challenge. And ultimately, the judges, who were impartial, came to the conclusion that no one had presented anything that would actually say, yeah, this disproves. So no one won the prize. However, it's not exactly a slam dunk win for De Grey either, because they also said that you haven't really defined this in a way that is very scientific.
Oh, right. It's not like a it's not a scientific hypothesis that you can set out to clinically disprove.
Right. So I want to read a couple of little comments that were actually not little, so a couple of significant comments that one of the judges said, is Nathan Mervhold, who said this. At issue is the conflict between the scientific process and the ambiguous status of ideas that have not yet been subjected to that process. The scientific process requires evidence through independent experimentation or observation in order to accord credibility to a hypothesis. SENS is a collection of hypotheses that have mostly not been subjected to that process and thus cannot rise to the level of being scientifically verified. However, by the same token, the ideas of SENS have not been conclusively disproved. SENS exists in a middle ground of yet-to-be-tested ideas that some people may find intriguing, but which others are free to doubt. And he goes on quite a bit more, says that SENS has many unsupported claims and is certainly not scientifically proven. He says, I personally would be surprised if De Grey is correct in the majority of his claims. However, I don't think that the people who submitted the rebuttals have provided that SENS is false. That would require more research. In some cases, SENS makes claims that run parallel to existing research while being more sensational. Future investigation into those areas will almost certainly illuminate the controversy. Except this was England, so it might have been controversy. But at any rate, it goes – others people had similar things to say. Another person, Craig Venter, said that in my view, the critics have not demonstrated that SENS is unworthy of discussion, but the proponents of SENS have not made a compelling case for it. So in other words, nobody came out looking great out of that experience.
Well, so from the little bit that I've heard Aubrey de Grey talking, I've gotten the impression that, he's very concerned with keeping possibilities open. I get the impression that his main objective is to get people to think about things that they might otherwise not think about.
I would agree with that. I think that he has – his concern, well, he often says that he thinks if we really dedicate a lot of resources to looking at ways of defeating the symptoms of aging, then in the case of mice, because this is really what he's talking about right now, it's just experimenting with mice and not on people yet. But that if we were to really it's an important thing to mention.
Specify,
But that he would concentrate – if we really concentrate, we might be able to crack – the problem within 10 years. So if we don't really concentrate, if we take our time, it may be more like 40. And if we're really not interested in it, it might take 100. Now, personally, I think a lot of his concerns are going to be taken care of just from other disciplines that are also working on similar problems, right? I mean, you have the whole field of oncology that's working on the cancer problem. And it may be that the solution is very similar to the one that De Grey proposes, or it may be something totally different. But I think that if you're looking at it as a unified discipline, yes, it's going to be one of those things that, you know, might be a tough sell just because it sounds a little outlandish when you first think about it. Like, I want to stop, you know, to halt the process of aging or the symptoms of aging, if you prefer. But I do think there are plenty of different disciplines out there that are working on these individual pieces, and that's going to continue. And
absolutely. And there's already, I mean, there's a bunch of examples from nature of animals that don't quite behave the way that aging says that they should.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, I'd say one fact that is in DeGray's favor is that that senescence is, or that, you know, normal rate, the kind of senescence that humans experience is not a guarantee across the entire animal kingdom.
Right.
Like you could, for a while you may have seen this, there were these claims going around the internet that lobsters are immortal. Have you heard this?
Yeah. I remember hearing that phrase somewhere and I never looked into it because, I just got jealous. I also kept on imagining and little just, lobster immortals battling it out until one of them is left.
Right. Yeah. There can be only one lobster.
Yeah. So. That's another Highlander joke. I think I made one in the last podcast too.
Yeah, we made several. No, well, it turns out that this isn't exactly true. So it's not – we don't have any evidence, as far as I can tell, just from my research, we don't have any evidence that lobsters can live forever. But we do have –
Well, we keep eating them. They're so delicious.
That's the trouble. Every time we try to study them, the scientists end up steaming
getting
them
hungry,
and getting some butter sauce.
They should just have me do it because I'm allergic to lobsters, so I'll never eat
really?
Them.
Oh, wow. So you could get a grant.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, so, okay, here's what is interesting about lobsters. So, we don't have any evidence that they would live forever if they weren't killed by, you know, some fish eating them or something like
sure,
that.
Sure, or some other
but
disease.
We do have evidence that they have much slower senescence than we see in lots of other creatures and there, basically, it's worth a lot more research into looking at the ways that lobsters age or don't age and seeing what actually happens. We don't know enough about that. One thing I was reading that it's apparently just kind of difficult to track lobsters and stuff like that.
Well, they're so
like
wily.
They can't move that fast.
But I'd have to imagine that you interfere with their life processes when you remove them from the ocean and stuff like that. But
yeah.
Also, but they do like say they continue to grow.
Mm-hmm.
That so a really old lobster, the way we grow until a certain age, I don't know, you know, in the 20s
yeah.
or something like that, and then
yeah.
we start shrinking. Well, we might grow horizontally, but
yeah,
you know,
I have been.
We don't continue to get stronger.
Right.
I mean, a lobster might, and some other decapods that live in the water, they do the same thing. As they get older, they just get bigger and bigger and more powerful, and they don't lose function the way we do when we age.
Yeah.
I saw one study that suggested a link. They said, so the slow senescence of lobsters might be linked to high telomerase activity that you can detect all throughout their body tissues at any age. And telomerase, essentially it...
It's a protein created by telomeres, which are those end caps to DNA strands.
Yeah.
Right, that get a little shorter every time a cell divides.
Mm-hmm.
And so once that cap goes down to nothing, that's pretty much... That's like the end for that cell.
Right. That's what triggers that cell death, supposedly.
Yeah. So,
yeah, so they have an excess
high telomerase activity
gotcha.
All throughout the body, and maybe that prevents some of that
aging effect.
Yeah.
Sure.
Not just lobsters. Actually, there are some things that come closer to that immortality claim. Like for example, the polyps called hydras. You heard about
yeah.
these? They're
yeah.
these
yeah.
tiny little things, apparently they can live. As far as we know, they can seem to live forever.
Ah,
for all we can tell.
Indefinite lifespans.
Yeah, they just keep going. There's also the immortal jellyfish.
I've heard about that one.
Turritopsis dorni.
I'm glad that you said it, because I wasn't willing to attempt that one. It seems to reverse its life cycle back to the polyp stage and then grow again.
Yeah.
And they think that it does this through during that rejuvenation, it undergoes cellular transdifferentiation, which is what happens in stem cells.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's exactly right. The jellyfish, as far as we can tell, can do this indefinitely. We don't know of any point at which it has to stop and die.
Yeah, it's apparently kind of an issue. It can take over large segments of the ocean, and it can apparently grow in any ocean that it wants to, and it's immortal. So, I mean, you know, it's running around with swords and just killing everything.
I wonder if that what you just said has any application to the idea of humans being able to live forever.
Well, I mean, there's definitely been a lot of scientific inquiry into the matter, but it's
and bioethical inquiry.
There's also bioethical.
Well, what I was referring to was the fact that you said that they can expand population wise if they're not dying off.
Right. Yeah. Well, that was kind of what our whole discussion was in our last podcast too. We had a whole section on that. And De Grey, for his pretty much doesn't acknowledge or doesn't. Acknowledge is probably the wrong word. He doesn't focus on the questions of things like population any of those other – or political matters. He's looking specifically at an engineering problem.
Yeah. I've read him make comments that are kind of like, well, like clearly people will just stop having kids and that'll be great. And I'm like, well, I'm not sure. Okay.
That's one way of looking at it. If you want to stick up in his defense for a second, it might be worth saying that even if there could be negative implications to this, we at least want to have the option.
Right. No, his point is that he says, look, why are you – if you are sitting there saying that children are at a disadvantage or that this is harming children in some way by telling people not to have kids, he turns that around and saying, well, why are you saying that old people need to die?
Right.
So
sure.
I mean, that's kind of his. Oh, yeah, that's the kind of way he turns that around. It's like that's ageist. You're saying that old people need to die so that we can make room for young people.
And it's also certainly true that there are a lot of biological limits that if you go back to certain points in history, I mean, people would just have to accept as this is just what life is. You know, you die. Most half of babies die before they're five or something like that.
Just a couple centuries ago, the human lifespan was only what, like 40 years?
Yeah, but that was because
including infant mortality.
Right, it was because of infant mortality.
Sure,
that if you lived past the age of 21, there was a good chance you're going to see the age 65.
Right,
but you had to live to 21 first.
I don't know. The point I'm making is that just because something is basically the way things are doesn't mean that we'll always see it that way. I mean,
that's true.
It could be in the future people would look back and be like, oh my God, what was wrong with these people? They just accepted that aging was inevitable. I mean, what a horrible way to live.
And that's another thing that he points out. And really, ultimately, my view is that even if you were to disprove the sense approach, even if you were to maybe not disprove it, but at least say that it's unrealistic or it's too narrowly focused or the solutions that have been proposed are far more complicated than what we expect. Now, keep in mind, you know, his approach right now is looking at mice, and that even if we do figure out how to make it work for mice, we may never figure out how to make it work for people. But let's say that all of that, you know, you can just put that aside. The interesting thing to me is that if we do tackle this problem, even if we don't ultimately figure out how to completely eliminate the symptoms of aging, we will very likely learn other ways that can help us improve quality of life. It may not mean that you will be like a 25-year-old when you hit age 70, but you might have a greater resistance to certain types of diseases that otherwise you might be vulnerable to. So I think that it's a very valuable line of inquiry, no matter what.
Definitely.
Well, what do we always say around here?
Yeah, it may not work, but we'll still learn something along the way. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know we bring that point up in just about every podcast, but I really do believe that's true. I would much rather that people seriously look into this because best case scenario, it works.
Oh, yeah.
Worst case scenario, we learn stuff.
Right.
That's not bad.
If our worst case scenario is a cure for cancer,
that's still pretty good. Yeah. Now, truly the worst case scenario is not looking into it at all and just accepting that what we've got is what we've got and that's it. But fortunately, the human history is filled with people who refused to take that position. And I suspect that will continue. I mean, I just know some people. That's all.
You know some people.
You've met one or two.
Yeah, one or two, and they tend to be.
They sound like downers to me.
No. These are the people who are like, no, I'm not accepting this. So anyway, I'm sure everyone out there knows someone like that. If you guys have suggestions for future topics that we should cover in Forward Thinking, I invite you to share that information with us because otherwise. we're just going to have to keep on guessing until we finally cover how telepathy is going to work in the future.
Oh, right.
Yeah, well, that's probably, you know, off a ways. I can't see it just yet.
There are seven steps to telepathy.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'll tell you about them after the show.
I think, right. I think it's 20 to 40 years off.
An excellent guess there, Lauren.
That's a number. I'd print that.
Yeah. You know? All right. Anyway, the important thing is that I need you to send email or get in touch with us in some other way because I have not developed telepathy yet. So if you want to send us an email, that address is fwthinking@discovery.com or go to fwthinking.com. We have links there to our social media so you can get in touch with us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Google+. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you want to hear. You can also read up on our blogs. You can watch the videos. You can listen to other episodes of the podcast there. Everything you would ever want right there. FWThinking.com.
Everything.
Everything. Absolutely. Is right there. FWThinking.com.
Free chocolate.
Unicorn giggles.
Look, I'm just saying everything. Stop giving more examples. All right, guys. That's it. We look forward to talking to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.